Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning and welcome to Africa Link, coming to you from Bonn in Germany. My name is Abubakar Jallo. And coming up on the broadcast, Kenya launches air attacks on Al-Shabaab bases in Somalia in retaliation for the Garissa massacre. But is this satisfactory?
This retaliation, for the time being, may assuage the pains of the residents of Garissa and the country as a whole. But is indeed true that even with the retaliation attacks, the dead will not be brought back to life?
Ghana cracks down on cybercrime in an effort to make the growing business of internet scamming unattractive.
I want to give a caution to the criminals that if they think they are up to the task, we are wet to the task. If they don't think they won't sleep, we will never sleep because we have sworn an oath of secrecy to serve the nation.
And on Making a Different segment, we meet Tony Allen, a Nigerian and a great Afrobeat musician.
When I got my own way, I was able to do music the way I wanted. Afrobeat is not just to be militant. No, Afrobeat music could be anything. You could sing love song with Afrobeat.
These stories and more coming in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
Kenya has sent in warplanes to bomb two Al-Shabaab camps in Somalia. The Kenyan army report that its fighter jets pounded camps in Gondodowe and Ismail, both in the Gedo region on the Kenyan border. The army has not made any claims about how much damage the bombings caused, but this is the first major military response to last week's attack on Garissa University College. Al-Shabaab gunmen stormed the student campus and singled out Christians, killing almost 150. President Uhuru Kenyatta vowed to retaliate in the severest way possible. But isn't this happening too soon? A question I put to Kenyan political commentator Brian Singoro Wanyama.
The attacks by the government to try and surmount the Al-Shabaab fighters may not be termed to be a little bit hasty. The reason is that the government of Kenya, arising from the attacks that occurred at the Garissa University 3 days ago, where we lost over 150 students, the attack actually got the government napping, and I think it made attacks in other countries look like it is a child's play.
Do you believe this retaliation will satisfy the victims of Garissa attack?
For the time being, because of the pains that the country has gone through, because of the death of the 150, a record 150 students within 3-4 hours, this retaliation for the time being may assuage the pains of the residents of Garissa and the country as a whole. But it's indeed true that even with the retaliation attacks, the dead will not be brought back to life. So the government needs to engage itself in long-term measures that will neutralize this Al-Shabaab group, terror group.
Is Kenya prepared enough now to prevent further attacks from Al-Shabaab?
I think the way the situation is right now, first of all, with our troops fighting in Somalia, trying to pacify Somalia, and also with the porous borders between Kenya and Somalia, I think the government, for the time being, needs to up its antenna in order to match the attacks from this terrorist group in the name of Al-Shabaab. It will also be beneficial for the government to intensify the intelligence gathering by the security agencies. It will also be indeed be wise for the government of Kenya to share intelligence information with the developed countries like the USA, Britain, Germany, Israel, and other countries that have the capacity and the capability to gather up-to-date and spot-on intelligence.
Before this attack on Garissa, the Kenyan government was informed about it. Do you think that was a lack of action on the side of the government?
It is indeed on record that when some Western countries issued travel advisories warning their countrymen not to frequent certain areas in Kenya, the Kenyan government took great exception to the same and dismissed those advisory reports. So up to that point, it is probably it's true that the government of Kenya did not act accordingly as per the intelligence that had been gathered.
How much of a military response, as opposed to other responses is necessary, do you think, to solve Kenya's terror crisis?
I think we just need large-scale, massive military operation to get rid of the Al-Shabaab from their hideout. It is not a conventional war. This is a terrorism group that perhaps operates in cells of 1, 2, 3. So it becomes very difficult to infiltrate such a cell in order to neutralize it.
Kenyan political commentator Brian Singoro Wanyama. Meanwhile, Kenya is beefing up security on its border with Somalia. But to what extent will this help to prevent homegrown terrorism? Our East Africa correspondent James Shumayula was on the streets of Nairobi to find out what Kenyans think.
The killing of 148 university students in northeastern Kenya by Al-Shabaab militants has drawn a mixed reaction from Kenyans. Some praise the government for crushing the attack within a short time, while others complain about the lack of national security. They want the Nairobi authorities to deploy battalions of troops along the porous border with neighboring Somalia.
Our border should be secured, not when there's a threat, but always so that we remain safe.
They should heighten security and they should not ignore the security threats and the security alerts.
Some Kenyans are convinced that the attacks were carried out by militants who are trained in Somalia, but who are living in Kenya itself.
Somebody from outside can't know our country, so it's only people who are within.
The government should increase more of its security.
The government had tried, but those who are doing such things are within Kenya, not from outside Kenya. That probably means they are being trained in Kenya.
Some Kenyans are also wondering whether Kenyan troops stationed in Somalia as part of the African Union AMISOM force should be brought home.
I feel the government should get our troops back. Instead of them being in Somalia, they should be guarding our borders. I feel the enemy is within us. I feel the government should do more because our armies are in the barracks, waiting for war. We are already at war. They should come out and protect us.
Opposition leader Raila Odinga, who was prime minister when Kenya first sent troops into Somalia in 2011, said the government should start thinking about pulling out, just as the United States withdrew troops after 18 soldiers were killed in the 1993 Black Hawk Down incident in Mogadishu. Meanwhile, the Kenyan army said Kenyan fighter jets had pounded Al-Shabaab insurgent camps in southern Somalia on Monday. This came on the second day of national mourning as security forces tried to hunt down those behind the university killings.
James Shimayula in Nairobi.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
You could describe it as online dating. An American has been in a long-distance relationship with a woman in Africa. After spending much of his money on her, he travels to Africa to meet the woman of his dreams. When he gets there, he finds out that not only does she not exist, but also that all the nude photos of the woman he has been receiving were made up by someone from an internet cafe. He has been scammed, and this type of cybercrime is popular in Ghana. It started in Nigeria and is dubbed 419. In Ghana, it's called Sakawa. Many Europeans and North Americans have fallen foul of this scam. Several African as well as non-African businessmen have become victims of this brand of cybercrime. Ghana has begun cracking down on the con artists to make the business less rewarding for young people. Maxwell Sook in Tamale has more.
On Thursday, April 2, a crowd of residents surrounded the premises of the district court in Tamale to witness the trial of 28 suspected internet scammers who were arrested during a police sweep over during the weekend. The suburb criminals are widely known as Sakawa in the Ghanaian context. Largely, Sakawa means blood money to many natives in Tamale. It involves series of rituals and superstition in order to convince unsuspecting business people using the internet. Police Superintendent Peter Abila is a Northern Regional Crime Officer and was part of those who instructed the arrest.
I want to give a caution to the criminals that if they think they are up to the task, we are wet to the task. If they don't think they will sleep, we will never sleep because we have sworn an oath of secrecy to serve the nation, Mother Ghana.
Many young people around Tamale see this as a fast means to make wealth, an issue which has incurred the wrath of security agencies and traditional authority. Superintendent Abila says the security agencies will not rest until it flushes out such miscreants.
You see young men who are not working and you see them affluent, buzzy, riding cars. You ask yourself, you who's a worker for so many years, you can't get that money to buy that car. Then you ask yourself, this young guy about 18, 25 years, for how many years has he worked to get that money to buy that car?
Following the arrest, majority of the scammers fled to unknown locations. A quite tense moment for them now. Night has fallen in Tamale and I am at one of the busy internet cafes located at the city center. People are moving in and out to use the internet here, but no one is ready to talk to me at this very moment because a least mistake is enough to land you in trouble. However, by telephone, one boy who claimed he has stopped scamming told me how difficult it is to find a client in the internet.
No, it's not easy. It's not easy because...
No, it's not easy. It's not easy because if you are going to do it, you have to go looking on the internet. You can search for friends in America where they're involved in trade or doing business with banks.
Traditional authorities are concerned over the future of society following the emergence of Sakawa. One of them is Ambassador Yakubu Abdullahi, Paramount Chief of Sanarugu Traditional Area.
Cybercrime is a source of great worry to all good people in the society. And it is a canker that we need as a nation to stand up together to fight and eliminate from our communities.
The issue even gets bigger with the introduction of smartphones and simple internet gadgets. Police Superintendent Peter Abila says there are big people behind the practice.
It is a real big issue. It is well organized. We have big people behind the issue. They are big fish, but those who arrest are the smaller fish.
Most residents of Tamale are also worried about the Sakawa boys, not because of their affluent lifestyles, but because of the belief that the scammers use human beings for their money rituals.
Oh, they are nuisance to the society, especially even now in Tamale. They are very common and you see them in Camrys, that's their common car. So if you see it, with that means if they are not carrying money inside, then they are carrying children inside.
Sakawa people are very bad. They use the children, ladies, and all sorts of things to do their money ritual.
The police cyber crime department is responsible for handling issues of cyber fraud, but the unit is currently stationed in Accra, which is thousands of miles away from Tamale.
Maxwell Souk in Tamale on the north of Ghana.
Africa on the move.
Now to Rwanda, where the government plans to establish a new maternity leave benefit scheme for working mothers. Under the old legislation, mothers would lose 80% of their salary if they stayed away from work from the 7th to 12th week of their 12-week maternity leave. This provoked an outcry and complaint that the well-being of newborn babies and their mothers was being put at risk. Flora Kaitezi has the details of the new scheme.
According to Rwandan law, official maternity leave lasts 12 weeks. A working mother is currently paid her full salary during the first 6 weeks of her leave. For the second half, she has to surrender 80% of her salary or return to work. The idea behind this was to encourage the women to continue with their careers, but for many mothers, this is simply too soon. Esperance Musengamana went on maternity leave several months ago.
A baby is required to breastfeed for at least 6 months, but even 3 months is not enough, so that means that when it becomes a month and a half, it is terrible for the baby. It is a violation of the baby's basic rights and the mother's. A mother who has had a natural birth or a cesarean birth is not strong enough after a month and a half.
In the past, most mothers would go back to work after 6 weeks because they couldn't afford to lose the large chunk of their monthly pay if they stayed away. Now, working mothers in Rwanda are breathing a sigh of relief after the government approved the establishment of a maternity leave benefit scheme. This means that working mothers like Solange Uwera will now be able to stay longer at home to take care of their newborn babies.
This is great news. I think anyone who has heard this is happy because this is giving value to the newborn children. We used to think it was a tactic they used to impose family planning.
The scheme will be open to all formal employees and employers from both the private and public sector who make a contribution of 0.6% of gross salaries to the maternity scheme. This money will then finance the leaves of working mothers during the last 6 weeks of their leave, as Claver Gatete, Rwanda's Minister of Finance and Economic Planning, explains.
If every employee and every employer makes this contribution, it will help us to provide salaries for working mothers in the 6 weeks of their maternity leave on a 100% basis. This means that an employer will contribute 0.3% and employees 0.3%. During our consultations, even with the private sector, which employs a big number of women, we found that this was possible because 0.3% is quite a small amount.
The maternity leave benefit scheme, which was approved by Rwanda's cabinet, is expected to be operational by the start of the next financial year on the 1st of July 2015.
Flora Kaitezi in Kigali. Zambia's economy has shown robust signs of growth, but according to a World Bank report, this growth will begin to stagnate if the high rate of unemployment is not brought down. Young people in particular are finding it difficult to get a job. This report by Kati Sikombe in Lusaka is now presented by Sela Oneko.
Youths in Zambia make up the majority of the population, accounting for 68% of all Zambians. More than 3,000 youths graduate from Zambian universities and colleges every year, many with no job in sight. 2 weeks ago, hundreds of university graduates protested against the lack of jobs and called on the government to create more employment opportunities. Police reacted by arresting some of the students who are now waiting to appear in courts for unlawful assembly. Kalinda Zimba was one of the graduates who demonstrated, but was able to escape.
It's a shame. It's really there. And there's a lot of unemployed youth at this time, especially in Zambia. I'm not really quite sure if Zambians are lacking entrepreneurship skills or because jobs are just not there. Youth can actually do something for themselves. A lot of people actually have skills. A lot of people have dreams, plans and everything. Maybe they just lack a little bit of a push in terms of money.
So Buza Banda is another graduate who has been looking for a job. In 8 years, he has had little luck.
If I look at other countries and all, it's better. But here the government doesn't seem to actually put effort to it.
For Moses Jere, a father of five, the high unemployment levels have affected him as he is still looking after three of his grown-up children who have graduated university.
You invest so much into their education and you hope they would have a job. So it's another strain to find that even after going through college, there are no jobs. And when you look at those protests, they are genuine in that every year there are thousands of people graduating and there are no jobs.
But Minister of Youth, Vincent Mwale, says that the government has actually set aside $2 billion to help youth start their own businesses. Mwale says that this will be done by offering loans to youth at low interest rates once current problems are solved.
We believe that if monitoring and evaluation unit is well strengthened, we are able to follow up the youths that are following, you know, funds, then we'll be able to ensure that there's good recovery. But we are also working with the Minister of Justice. We've submitted a list of all those who failed to pay back so that Minister of Justice can then, you know, try and help us, you know, recover this money.
Zambia's ruling party, Patriotic Front, has now been in power for 4 years. Despite the promises, many Zambian youths I spoke to felt betrayed by the politicians, who they say only wanted their votes, but failed to address the issues at hand.
Kathy Sikombe filed that report from Lusaka.
Making a difference.
In Making a Difference this week, we meet Tony Allen, a great Afrobeat composer and songwriter. Allen, along with the legendary Fela Kuti, pioneered the African beat music. Now 74 and based in Paris, Allen is still as active as ever. The celebrated percussionist recently released a new album and is currently on tour in Europe. Maria Bakalapulo caught up with him in Glasgow, Scotland, to talk about his music and political concerns.
You cannot help but feel starstruck when you shake the hand of the great Afrobeat drummer, Tony Allen. Anyone who is a fan of African music has danced to his grooves. Self-taught, Allen didn't start playing drums until he was 18. Born in Lagos, Nigeria, he hooked up with the great master of Afrobeat, Fela Kuti, and became the drummer and musical director of his band, Africa 70, from 1968 to 1979. Kuti and Allen were a musical force to reckon with. As Kuti put it, without Tony Allen, there would be no Afrobeat. After over a decade of being the mainstay of Kuti's band, Tony Allen grew weary of the constant turmoil and lack of credit and decided it was time to go solo.
When I got my own way, I was able to do music the way I wanted. Afrobeat is not just to be militant. No, Afrobeat music could be anything. You could sing love song with Afrobeat. So that's why I decided that, okay, I'm the beat. The beat is me, and I can control my beat, and I know I want to take my beat far.
But even though he claims he's just a musician, there are political issues that Allen is passionate about, and they play a big part in the music he writes.
That's right.
The song Boat Journey is a kind of open letter to all African refugees attempting to migrate illegally to Europe, warning them that it is not worth the dangerous journey. Countries such as Italy, Spain, and Greece don't make it easy once they reach their soil.
My advice, everybody has a right to change their situation, but why can't they do it safely?
At 74, Allen sees no limits on his music, and he continues working with other renowned artists, such as Zap Mama, a Belgian all-female Afro-pop group, and Flea, bassist from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Allen enjoys the challenge.
I'm not just a drummer, you know? I'm not coming to do what I know.
That report was by Maria Bakalapulo.
Listen up for Africa Link's new frequencies. From March 30th, catch us in East Africa from 4 to 5 a.m. UTC on 9,800 and 15,275 kilohertz. Africa Link, get the stories you need to know about.
And that's it for this edition of Africa Link. Before we end the broadcast, a recap of the main stories. Kenya has launched airstrikes on Al-Shabaab bases in Somalia in retaliation for the Garissa massacre. Ghana has begun cracking down on cybercrime in an effort to make the growing business of internet scamming less rewarding. We've also been hearing about Tony Allen, a Nigerian Afrobeat composer and songwriter. For comments and suggestions, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160957 59510. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn. Bye for now.